I think the amount that you need to retire depends obviously on a few factors. This year, it would need to be something like...
What are some of the unique factors that you took into account into this calculation?
What my guide attempts to do is to break those down into some simple assumptions. And I see us possibly breaking 200K. I think it's still realistic. The nice thing about it is it's still being adopted. So people can actually get some alpha on this and still take advantage of some pretty extreme gains.
A lot of people compare it to the adoption of the internet.
Bitcoin is being adopted much faster than the internet was. The health of the dollar is probably in worse shape than most people are really realizing.
What's up, guys? 70,000 of you guys keep coming back every single month, but 71% are not subscribed. So you're going to miss out on some of the great Green Candle content. So make sure that you're hitting that subscribe button with the bell notification so you get notified every time I drop a video. All right, now let's get back into this great interview. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Smitty in the house. He's the legend behind one of the coolest retire on Bitcoin calculators that I've seen. And so I had to bring him on. As you guys know, I love this topic and I want to dive in. So Smitty, I'll start it off the jump, man. How much Bitcoin do you need to retire? And what are some of the unique factors that you took into account into this calculation that you think a lot of these are not taking in?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, great to have the conversation with you, Brandon. Thanks for having me. I think the amount that you need to retire depends obviously on a few factors. And a lot of people are, you know, different stages of life, different places on the globe, have different situations in terms of income and savings. But what my guide attempts to do is to break those down into some simple assumptions and uses the power law math to project out, you know, what that amount would need to be in a given year in the future that you want to retire and based on your age and based on your annual expenses in the future. So roughly speaking, and I just, you know, I say roughly speaking, starting this year, it would need to be something like around 10 Bitcoin, you know, and that varies a little bit depending on some other factors, but that's, I think that's a good starting point for people this year.
So 10 Bitcoin to retire this year, but say 5 to 10 years from now, I'd like to dive in and just see like, you know, how dramatically that changes, because I think the power law is pretty unique in the way that it is broken down and, you know, kind of calculating the overall Bitcoin price. Obviously, it projects out the Bitcoin price with all of this, but, you know, I think, you know, I have some qualms with it. I don't think it's necessarily a bad tool, but I do think that over time, all models will be broken. I think that, you know, the way that you look at Bitcoin right now, there really hasn't been an asset like that. So one, I think power law is probably a little conservative, which would be better for the model here. But, you know, why did you choose the power law to use? And, you know, break it all down for us, for the kids at home here.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, I agree. I think the power law is going to be on the conservative side. My philosophy, you know, I don't know what everybody else's philosophy is with retirement plan, but I think it's probably a good thing to be somewhat conservative when you're doing, you know, it's a pretty important thing to plan for. So I think to plan for more conservative cases is just, you know, generally a responsible approach to doing one's own retirement planning. The reason, there are a number of reasons why I think my approach is conservative in addition to the power law approach. One is that it's not the average price of the power law going forward. It's actually, the latest version is the fifth percentile. It's called the fifth percentile, meaning that you're taking the upside volatility sort of out of the equation. Everybody's very concerned in the future about these 80% crashes and things like that. But what this does is it tracks, if you've seen that plot of the power law line that you can't unsee, there's a support line that basically tracks with all the accumulation phases, or call them bear markets, but it's a straight line. So the fifth percentile essentially traces that support line, and it's not going through these bubbles that you see, you know, every year. So in that sense, it's allowing you to plan around that support line and takes that volatility out of the equation. The other reason is that this assumes, Brandon, a 7% average exponential growth of the money supply, aka monetary inflation. And so that never goes away in this model, in this planner at all. It starts from today. It goes through to the year that you're planning to retire in, and it goes all the way to the end of your retirement. And the reason that's useful is that mostly people don't experience a 7% inflation in their life. Usually they experience, what they actually experience on the ground is something a little bit less than that. So it's a 7% average. And, you know, this has been pretty accurate. It's like 96, 97% R squared for the last 100 years, basically monetary inflation. That's going to continue forward. And so this accounts for that, right? So if you're going to retire in 2035 and you're expecting to spend down $100,000 a year for life expenses, that's $100,000 equivalent in 2035, So 2025, $100,000, not 2035, $100,000 a year. So there's a number of factors in here. I think it's a frugal and conservative planner. But yeah, of course, you could always go down in the weeds and tune a bunch of other knobs. You know, there's tax considerations. There's, can you leverage your Bitcoin? Can you take out Bitcoin backed loans? And can you kind of do that approach? But this is meant to be an approachable guide that can be used by people of all ages. You can have everything captured kind of on a single page and give you a nice target.
Now with this, I think it's interesting too, you broke it down by different countries, which I think is really cool. So obviously there's a bunch of different, aspects, obviously living conditions, all of these things, but Bitcoin is global money at the end of the day. So you could essentially, you know, theoretically take it anywhere, but, you know, when you were coming across some of these, you know, I know you, assumed 7% annual M2 money supply growth. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that you, took into account from maybe some of these different jurisdictions when you're looking at, you know, retirement as of location and other aspects of it that might change that? Or is there anything that you would think that could potentially be outside, you know, maybe this model that could cause it to break?
Yeah, across the different countries, kind of an interesting thing. There's going to be a lot of exceptions depending. So if you live in like Bolivia, right? This is not to say that because you live in Bolivia, you are going to be able to retire in 10 years on 0.1 BTC. You know, your lifestyle could be very different and you might need one BTC or you could live in a specific jurisdiction where you need less. So what this is actually showing is averages. This is all averages. And particularly it's based on the average income for these different countries. And so again, it's sort of a simplified starting point. And it's meant to really compare between different countries. So it's going to require a lot more Bitcoin to retire in France than it's going to require to retire in Bolivia, for example. And so it's supposed to give you a sense. But the encouraging thing about it is that if you find yourself in sort of the average case and you live and your age between 5 and 75, you know, this might actually encourage you to look, you know, your target stack is 0.1 BTC. Okay, well, on average, where is this kind of, you know, maybe change some of your future retirement goals in terms of where you want to retire, you know? So that's sort of what it's really meant to do. And it's the same sort of assumptions. It's the 7% inflation adjusted. That could change because some of these are not actually USD based, although a lot of these operate using USD. But it's the same fifth percentile power regression model as well.
Now, it is interesting that we are kind of doing this at the eve of a big sell-off here this past weekend. We're recording this on October 14th. Obviously, historically, we've got the Bitcoin meme October with the last quarter of the year here really being solid. But you've printed out some good research about October and the price action. Now, with this, you know, I already told you a little bit. I gave you a little bit of my thoughts on, you know, maybe I'm considered a moon boy, but I do definitely think that the price action here is Although the power law says it's slowing down, I see governments adopting, I see institutional adoption rapidly increasing. And I think that there, you know, there's obviously a bunch of Bitcoin being taken off exchanges, OTC desks, you name it. The buying pressure is there from the big players and big money. But on the flip side of things, traditional finance looks at Bitcoin as just kind of a, you know, similar to any other type of asset, especially with this power law. You know, as it gets bigger, the volatility goes down. In my opinion, I think that we still have a lot of the upside potential, but we're going to build a stronger floor base from where we are right now. Now, I think that this could be kind of something that we see with the potential of a supply shock. Now, I'll put you on the spot here. Do you see that as a possibility here in the future? Where, you know, the power law, it has these bans, but we do have the potential to really break out of it here in the near term, just with all this buying pressure we have.
There's a lot there. So I'll kind of separate a couple things out. One is I've been tracking this October and historical October trends lately. This is not really related to the power law analysis that I do, which is more of a long-term trend analysis. And we can, I'll talk about that in a sec. The October thing, you never know exactly what Bitcoin's going to do. It's never exactly the same from year to year. But if you look at the historical trends, October's been a very bullish year. And so it's been either the first or second highest return month historically. But some years there's exceptions. But it does particularly well when you start getting around the years that are supposed to be up years. And so the median return by the end of the month in October is supposed to be 15.6, and the average is about 27.7. And so you can look at it through different lenses, but in both of those cases, you're talking about the top 1 or 2 months in terms of. And the other thing is that, and I think a couple other analysts have pointed this out, is that most of the upside in October happens in the latter half. And so really, we're crossing the Rubicon right now to see what the latter half of October is really going to look like. And so I think people are quick to assume that October is going to be a dud this year. But if you look at the time series plots that I put together, you really don't know until you start to get past the 15th into the first few days. And then really, you might not see a heck of a lot of upside action until after the 22nd. So I'm still bullish on this month. My target this month, and again, this is not power law analysis. It's more of like, kind of data-driven estimates, right? I think it's going to be, will be between, somewhere between 130 and 150 by the end of the month. But I could be wrong. This is probabilities, right? It's not, there's nothing certain about this. This is a matter of probabilities. But that would be very bullish, in my opinion, to get into that price range by the end of the month. And I think it's very realistic still. And then to the power law thing, you can actually tie this in with the power law because we've seen this correction the last few days, which is really, especially for some of the newbies, has given them a heart attack. But we've had a few since we started this accumulation market in 2022, this uptrend, this very steady kind of stair-stepping action that we've had for the last couple of years. We tend to see kind of two steps up and then one step down, two steps up, one step down. And what this ends up doing is we're now right at the power law median, meaning that we're at roughly the 50th percentile. I don't think it's exactly 50th percentile, but it's just right about what the power law model would predict we would be at right now in terms of the median, which is pretty interesting, you know, as a power law analyst. And then if you want to go even further, I haven't shared a chart on this in a while, but you will find that over time, the strength of the power law correlation has been increasing over time for like the last like 8 years or more. And so meaning the R squared in that regression fit is going from like 96 to 97%. And so, yeah, so for the skeptics out there, power law, just keep that in mind. I think that that's just adding a little bit more credibility to the model all the time, in my opinion.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting. So, all right. Well, I mean, we're recording here at 1:12 just under 113. So if we get to 130 to 150, I definitely think that'll be super bullish here going forward. So, hey, man, I hope
let's
so
go.
And by the time we get to this podcast out here, it'll be like in a week or so. So who knows? Maybe we'll be there by the time this thing comes out and you look like a genius, or who knows, a giant sell-off.
Or everybody unfollows me at the end of the month. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Right. What if I told you you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven. Right. It always is tough with these price predictions and everything like that. But I do think it's very interesting the way that Bitcoin acts. Now, you know, you described kind of two different analyses with the short term and the kind of your long term view. I want you to dive into that a little bit more. How do you view it in the short term and then, you know, the long term correlation with the power law? Why do you kind of view those two? And do you see some maybe volatility here still in the short term to stick around? Or are you almost of the believer that, you know, maybe the 4-year cycles are kind of gone here?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I'm not totally sold that the cycles are gone. I am very open to the idea that we are going through what I call a phase change, which is within the power law, within the framework of the power law, we might be seeing a change in frequency, because I think a lot of people have been married to this exact precise 4-year cyclical timeline to hitting the price peaks for each cycle. And yeah, that has been pretty, interesting. And it's certainly caught my eye how it's been exactly, 1,064 days from peak to peak, but the other fact of the matter is that we have 3 data points on that, really kind of 2 data points. If you take the 2 cycles together, then it's like peak to peak to peak. That's interesting. But I can't think of anything as an analyst that fundamentally puts Bitcoin in a clock in the way that people are describing there. Sometimes you see these Bitcoin clocks. If that keeps going, I'll be very interested. I have a variant model of the power law where I try to capture what I project to be the tops, the price tops, but I don't put dates on it. So the way I do it is it's called the decay channel model, and people can check that out on my page. But I put a top model, right? So there's a lower bound and then there's an upper bound. The upper bound is the top model. And what that says is that if we reach a cycle top on X date, we expect to be in the ballpark of say 200K. And so for my model, for example, that would say, so if we actually hit the price peak for this cycle, at the end of this year, like December, later half of December, for example, should be peaking just over 200K. If that's indeed the top of the cycle. And that's been amazingly consistent over every single cycle since the beginning of Bitcoin, which is pretty compelling to me. But I'm not even totally married to that, to be honest, because I think there's, like you said, there's so much changing with the institutions. I think that the business cycle, it is cyclical, but I mean, we're kind of going through a change in the monetary order right now, it seems like. So kind of if I boil everything down, my long-term analysis is that I think the power law is going to hold in fiat terms, like in US dollars terms, until it doesn't. And I think we're going to start seeing signals that it's falling apart. and that R squared that I'm talking about, the correlation coefficient, that's going to start to drop. And likely what will happen, in my opinion, is the dollar amount will start to get closer and closer to the tops, and it'll start to sort of break to the upside, as they say. I think this will take years and years to do, if not a decade or so. I think it'll be a somewhat gradual process, but I'm totally open to that happening. I think we'll start to notice it happening. And I think, you know, I mean, look at Weimar Germany. There were, you know, billionaires and trillionaires and Marx, but it didn't mean that they were, you know, the ultra wealthy in terms of purchasing power. There's also a power law in gold. There's actually a power law in a lot of different assets, but the second hardest asset out there arguably is gold, right? So there's also a power law of Bitcoin in gold. And so sort of this concept that I'm playing around with, and I plan to put more analysis out on, is I almost anticipate a long-term power law trend in like gold, something that would actually be a good anchor point to what your purchasing power is for any individual. And then you might see US dollars fall off a cliff, or, you know, or fall up to the moon in terms of dollars, which would be kind of like a hyperinflation scenario. So, but that's sort of this is all long-term speculation, but this is what I could see playing out.
Yeah.
But for now, the power law is pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. The power law of Bitcoin in gold would be something that I would maybe attune to a little bit more, just because of how mm-hmm. much, you know, we're seeing Bitcoin or dollars get inflated away. And, you know, I don't know how closely you're following the precious metals market, but we just had recent, acceleration in silver and gold.
Silver all-time high. Yeah.
That's right. So we're kind of having this new quote unquote debasement trade gain a ton of popularity right now. What do you take into account of that? And what's your opinion of, you know, kind of this new craze for not only just Bitcoin, but all the precious metals and hard assets in general?
Yeah. I mean, look, I just think it means that I think that the health of the dollar is probably in worse shape than most people are really realizing. And I think that if there's one indicator that has told us that it's in an unhealthy state, it's been the price of gold and the price of precious metals in general. And the fact that now we've been seeing all-time high after all-time high of gold, and now we're seeing silver, I think it's, it's the biggest alarm bell ever that people should be running into hard assets at this point in time. So.
Yeah. So then do you take any close looks at like the bond market and how that is reacting comparatively as well?
I don't spend too much time looking at the bond markets, to be honest. I probably should, but I only have so much time on my hands. I tend to spend a lot of my time looking at the price action of Bitcoin and things like that.
But, no. Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to, yeah, because it seems like the bond market is kind of screaming for a collapse as well, similarly mm-hmm. to the gold and silver markets. But I think it's interesting the way the overall Bitcoin market has been playing out. Now, we just saw that recent run up in silver hitting that all-time high and gold continuing to run up. Gold's actually, I think, has 3 to 4 times better return than the S&P 500 mm-hmm. so far this year as well. But Bitcoin, you know, we've been kind of floating around this 100, to 120 mark here for quite some time. So do you think that this is the quarter here, this last like 3-ish months of the year, this is the time that we're going to really start to break out? And, where do you think we're going as far as like the cycles go? Because, you know, you mentioned the business cycle, and I want to kind of ask you about the halving. Do you think that you know, kind of plays into the 4-year cycle, or is it more just kind of based on the business cycles here?
Yeah, I think the primary factor is the liquidity cycles, global liquidity, business cycle, whatever you want to call it. I think when money is cheaper, I think that people, the investment markets are, more likely to get put into all kinds of different assets, right? And I think that given though this awakening to the falling apart of the dollar over the time, that people can see this trend, people are losing purchasing power. The average person, you know, the top 1% holds 50% of the wealth. And I think it's, people are becoming more hip to the fact that, it's, you have to hold hard assets. And so, yeah, I think the liquidity cycle has a lot to do with the cycles of Bitcoin. I'll put it that way, as sort of a primary factor. The halving, I mean, I've kind of looked at the halving. I've looked at the election cycle and things like this. There are these different correlates. The problem is it's really hard for me to find, because it hasn't really been a demand-driven thing with Bitcoin. Actually, some other great power analysts talk about this a lot, which is that Bitcoin's growth behavior behaves way more like a growing organism or network, like a true network. So it's more network and adoption driven than a demand driven thing, which is, you know, sort of a Metcalfe's law principle. So for that reason, I don't see it having a whole lot to do with the halving, although there may be some psychological factor, some anticipation there. Although I'm skeptical, I just don't really see a real mechanism there. I think it's a lot more to do with the liquidity cycles. As far as what are things going to look like? It's been a little bit of a so-so year for Bitcoin, especially compared to gold. This is true. But again, if you look at the nominal power law trend long-term for Bitcoin, it does have these cycles that kind of overlay onto the power law, right? These bubbles, the bubbles come and then they burst. Well, the kind of structure that they've had historically is that, first of all, they follow this support line on the bottom. So they might be in the 5th to 10th percentile. And then what they do is they creep up into the sort of middle section and they spend a decent amount of time in the sort of 30th to 50th, maybe, you know, 50th to 60th percentile. And they'll spend years kind of dancing around in that regime, even though the price is still growing. It's sort of trudging along, or crab crawling, as I say. And then what happens with Bitcoin is you really kind of have, like, in the final hour, a big spike where you jump into the, you know, oh, now you're in the 80th, 90th, 99th percentile price range. And it doesn't last there for a heck of a long time. And then the air is sort of let out of the balloon over the following year or two to get you back to the support line. So I don't think anything's too unusual in that regard this year. So I'm not like... I don't really see Bitcoin as having like a down year in that respect, because I just think that we're following the typical somewhat typical structure. The unusual thing about the structure this year is actually that we're following an unusually steady and low volatility path that's actually following an exponential. So I don't really know how it's going to play. I don't know if we're going to keep, like, in other words, we could either keep marching through the 60th percentile, 70th percentile, 80th percentile, and then boom, in a couple of years, we hit $1 million, you know, or is it going to be more like the previous years where we trudge along and then next year, 2026, we kind of blow off, you know, early 2026, we blow off, scrape the 200 to 300 range and then come back down. I think both scenarios are plausible, but yeah, I mean, I have low time preference as a Bitcoiner, so it doesn't, either way, I'm bullish, you know. But yeah,
100%. I mean, either way, I think we all are bullish, but I think it's kind of fun to play around and scope everything out, because there's so many just unknown mm-hmm. factors with this, right? Like, I mean, Lawrence Lepard has his book, The Big Print, where, you know, there could be excess liquidity just being dumped into the market. And I mean, it seems like that's, I mean, at least from the interest rate perspective, where we are going to cut interest rates here in the next couple mm-hmm. of weeks. And then presumably cut in December. And then by the time May comes around, when Powell is getting the boot here, Trump wants extremely low interest rates. So with the amount of potential liquidity coming in, you know, obviously it's hard to kind of project that in models, because it is human behavior at the end of the day. But, mm-hmm. You know, how much weight do you put into that? And do you think that, yeah. I guess, the three rate cuts for this year, like one previously and the two potentially upcoming, is already priced in at this point?
That's a great question. I've done some analysis where I look at both rate cut values historically and then asset values. But also importantly, the rate cut announcements, I think, are a big factor, right? Because people front run things and people anticipate what the market's going to do. So unfortunately, the answer is I don't know. But if I were to guess, I would say it's a little bit of both. I think that rate cut announcements themselves, not the rate cuts, but the rate cut announcements, historically have had some correlation to asset appreciation in the coming months. I don't remember the exact lags, but yeah, I think there will be some front running. I do anticipate more liquidity later on, in part because of these rate cut announcements. And I think that, but I think that overall right now, the state of the market and the investment environment is still not great. And so I think that we still need a lot of that to come back in real terms to start pushing the asset prices up. I don't know if that's going to be later this year, if it's going to be beginning of next year, but my expectation is that it's going to be somewhere in that range. But it would take a lot of inflow now to push the price up to say 200,000 by the end of this year at this point. I mean, now that we're mid-October, and I did some analysis on this, if you look at the historical trends, it's more likely that we get maybe up into the 150K range by the end of the year on average. Of course, Bitcoin bounces all around all over the place. There's a lot of volatility, but sort of nominally maybe 150K range. And then we're looking at more of the 200 plus K range if it happens first quarter or first half of next year.
This bull run, I think everybody should focus on getting their Bitcoin in self-custody and off exchanges. We all saw what happened last time with the huge blow-offs. We had Celsius, FTX, all of the big dogs blowing up. Well, this time, everybody's being smart and holding their Bitcoin in self-custody. This is why I'm going with the number one hardware wallet in the game. That's Trezor. You can go to trezor.io or the affiliate link below to get yours for 5% off using promo code GreenCandle5. Get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. They are a trusted brand. They've been in the game the longest of any hardware wallets out there. So that's why I've partnered with them, making it the easiest for you to get your Bitcoin off exchanges and not have to worry about any counterparty risk. So do it today. Go to the affiliate link below. Use promo code GreenCandle5. Enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
Sort of my baseline.
Now, where do you think that this, the potential top would be? Do you think, so I'm guessing then you think this cycle kind of bleeds into 26 and kind of continues that way?
I do. I just want to clarify. I don't know for sure. Not claiming that I do. People say, price prediction? I'm like, don't take anything. This is all, take it all with a grain of salt, right? In terms of predicting the price in any given year, especially within the over the course of months or years, I put not too much weight into that. I almost do it for fun. The power law long term is what I'm really, really put a lot of weight into, and I think speaks to the reliability of the asset. But aside from that, if we're just talking about short term price, yeah, I see us still possibly breaking 200K. I think it's still realistic. I just don't think it's going to necessarily happen by December this year, which I think if that's, again, going back to some analysts going, what happened to our Bitcoin clock? We were, exactly 4 years we hit to this month, November, December, we hit a price peak. I just don't think it works that way. I don't think it has to work that way. But I'm almost glad, because if my theory is correct that the decay channel holds up, that actually puts us into the mid 200Ks if we end up peaking next year. I'm still expecting, hoping for north of 200K. I don't think that's going to happen by the end of this year.
Okay, now let's get back to retirement here, because I think the Bitcoin as a retirement vehicle is very interesting, because if you just look around at the average retirement accounts, I think if you have like $1 million, or your goal is to have $1 million and retire in 30 to 40 years at this point, it would, the dollar's decaying so much, it would be around like worth 50K worth of 50 purchasing power right now, just because of how much they're inflating away the dollar. Where on the flip side, Bitcoin is obviously a deflationary asset, and it gets more valuable over time. So, you know, with this, obviously you need to do some price projections, which we kind of just went through here, but, you know, what do you think of Bitcoin just in general as revolutionizing the retirement and all of these different assets, right? I mean, we're getting, you know, the bond market, fixed income market, potentially real estate, all of these other markets seem to be getting swallowed up of Bitcoin. So in a general sense, how do you see Bitcoin just kind of, I guess, Bitcoinizing all of these different areas?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of people's off-ramp to being able to ensure some kind of retirement. I don't know that there's a lot of, you know, reliable options out there for a lot of people, especially because they have a hard time keeping their melting ice cube from melting, you know, their savings. In this country, it's a serious problem. I would almost call retirement a crisis. people, fewer number of people than ever are expected to have any kind of retirement. And so the trend there is very concerning. I think Bitcoin offers hope in that. And I think a lot of it goes back to its fundamentals, its value proposition as a sort of immaculate ledger, so to speak. It's a way to preserve energy and time so that you always know what your essentially what your purchasing power is going to be. And the nice thing about it is it's still being adopted. So people can actually get some alpha on this, and still there's a good, you know, I would say 10 plus year window here to take advantage of some pretty extreme gains. I mean, it's right now it's doing an average CAGR of 42, 45%, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's well above of what you'd be achieving with a standard S&P, you know, 401k, which I'm thinking more and more all the time is a bit of a scam. It's like, you know, how did we all buy into the idea that we could be sold a product which is essentially helping you keep afloat with the rate of inflation over time, but you're not allowed to ever spend it without huge tax penalties? So I think Bitcoin doesn't have any of that going against it. So I think, yeah, I think it's an amazing life raft that people ought to start researching if they haven't already.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because if you look at the S&P 500 just in general, since the year 2000, I kind of love pointing this out that if you look at it compared to the M2 money supply, it's just about even and maybe even under value, depending on when you look at it, depending on the day. So it's actually not even really technically keeping up with inflation. It's just, you know, kind of breaking even with all that, where we're being sold that it's helping your purchasing power, but then we're being sold these metrics and, you know, this data that it's basically one big fat lie where, you know, the CPI numbers, all of the inflationary numbers that they're giving us, it's all just incorrect. And everybody on Main Street seems to be feeling it, but the elites on Wall Street don't seem to care. So I think Bitcoin has been this kind of revolutionary aspect, but you know, as it stands right now, you know, Bitcoin is kind of looked at as digital gold when it comes to the United States. There's a lot of, you know, borrowing products where you can borrow against Bitcoin being used as collateral. You know, I just interviewed another guest who went into a little bit of the borrowing aspect and potentially the depreciating APRs with Bitcoin. Now, you took a different approach and just looked at it as different jurisdictions. So I'm kind of curious, one, do you see, like, you know, Bitcoin going to potentially a medium of exchange, or is Bitcoin kind of one of those assets for you where, you know, it is that digital gold?
A great, great question. And yeah, I agree about the S&P stuff, but the, okay. So something I have thought a lot about, maybe not so mathematically, but more conceptually, philosophically, is this value, store of value versus medium of exchange narratives around Bitcoin. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, it's not peer-to-peer cash. It's not being used that way, the way it was designed by Satoshi. I start to find when I talk to a lot of people out there, there's more people than I realize that agree with me on this sort of base case, which is Bitcoin needs to be adopted first, right? So what's the more efficient way for a financial asset to be adopted? Is it for it to be a medium of exchange, or is it for it to be a store of value first? And can it go through different phases where it fulfills more of one role than the other? I think the answer is yes to those. Like, so basically my base case is that the way that Bitcoin's adoption mechanics are working, people, yeah, now that's why people call it a Ponzi scheme, right? Like people, like Peter Schiff. It's like people only buy it because they know the next guy is gonna, be able to, because you know you're gonna be able to sell it to the next guy for more. Like, okay, well, people don't sell it typically right now. They're holding it as a store of value, which is exactly the reason that most people hold gold or a hedge, you know, protection against debasement. And so, of course, they're gonna use it as a store of value right now, right? And it's just a cherry on the top that it happens to be, you know, an order of magnitude higher returns than, or, you know, than any of the traditional, index funds or things like that out there. So my theory is that it will eventually become adopted as more of a medium of exchange as it starts to normalize itself into the global economy and become a mature, fully mature asset. I think it then at that point makes more sense, you know, because then the virus has spread, right? The virus has spread everywhere. Now everybody kind of speaks Bitcoin. It's functioning in all the different world economies. And the early adopters have benefited greatly from allowing it to be adopted to that scale.
Now, what do you think of the, jurisdictional potential arbitrage with all of this? I know we kind of just touched on it briefly at the beginning, but it seems like everywhere is getting more friendly towards Bitcoin, especially, you know, with the crypto president. I always cringe a little bit when I say that about Trump, but he has been very, very positive when it comes to Bitcoin in the industry. But it does seem like it's becoming a little bit more of the Wild West, I'll say. So what do you think of, these potential factors when it comes to the adoption?
Do you mean just like basically how do different global jurisdictions setting policy around Bitcoin affect its actual adoption? Is that what you
mean? Yeah, exactly.
Good question. I guess my thought on that is that it's a bit of a game. I've always kind of like been a subscriber of the game theory. Jason Lowry sort of, you know, the dominoes will fall one by one. I think it's in every nation's best interest to make their environment attractive to business. And I think if they don't play along, then they're going to see business leave. So, and I think that we've seen this in certain case examples. I think that's the direction that's going to go. I don't necessarily, it's almost like, again, I almost look at it through like a viral lens. I almost see like that's Bitcoin doing its job as you look from country to country. Like those are the decisions that they ultimately are going to make. I don't know if, you know, you heard Bitcoin, you heard Trump's language before he joined office, and it didn't speak so kindly on Bitcoin, right? And now we're calling him sort of a Bitcoin friendly president. So it's another interesting case, right? Where he was all about the dollar. It's like the idea, just his mindset was totally not mapping onto sort of the Bitcoiner mindset, which I think is really interesting. And I guess I would predict, to answer your question, those sorts of shifts in global leaders thinking time and time again until the dominoes start to fall all around us.
Now, as you're looking at Bitcoin as an adoption, right? A lot of people compare it to the adoption of the internet. This bull run, I'm looking for ways to stack Bitcoin in my sleep, and mining has always caught my eye. I've partnered with the guys over at Simple Mining to help you do just that. I don't recommend anything that I don't use personally, so I've got a machine up and running with them right this second. And they've even opened the facility up so anyone can go and visit. They manage over 15,000 machines for 500 clients, handling all of the maintenance and repairs so you don't have to. And for the Green Candle listeners, they're giving an exclusive offer: all the repairs for the first year for free. So if you've been thinking about mining, head on over to simplemining.io/greencandle to get this exclusive offer and learn about the potential tax benefits that you can get from mining with Simple Mining. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show. All right, a lot of people compare it to the adoption of the internet. Have you done a deep dive on this? And what do you see as like parallels or maybe some differences in the adoption?
Yes, a while back, this must have been 5 or 6 months ago. I think I just did one post on it, but basically the adoption mechanics of the internet do share a lot of similarities with Bitcoin, which speak to the network adoption nature of it. Internet being a network, of course, the net. One interesting thing is that Bitcoin is being adopted much faster than the internet was one feature I recall. I don't have it in front of me, so forgive me. I'm kind of reaching back to my memory. The other thing was that they both exhibited strong power law behavior. And I believe globally still, because you can look at each nation's internet adoption and you can look at the whole world's internet adoption. Last time I checked, I believe, because there's so many parts of the world that are still rapidly adopting the internet, thanks to, there's new technologies like Starlink. It still is pretty much a power law. I think the difference is that you're going to start to see, because it's not a financial asset, you don't have a meta asset attached to it, like a money system. So like fiat, where you can just print a bunch of money. You don't see the internet. Okay, so for example, in the developed world, like in North America, it sort of tapers off. So it's like a power law, and then it sort of turns into this like Weibull curve or like an S curve. And that sort of makes sense if you think about it, because you can only have so many internet users in the world, right? It's only going to have, once 90 plus percent of your population is using the internet, it's like, how could it keep trending as a power law? That said, I think Bitcoin, that's where I think Bitcoin and the internet differ a little bit, in that there's a financial value add. So there's a sort of a meta value to Bitcoin besides just holding the Bitcoin itself. So that's why I think things like whatever your measuring stick is in terms of purchasing power, a poor one, fiat or gold, I think it's going to have a much longer standing power law behavior. So that's one of the key differentiating characteristics between the internet and Bitcoin, in my opinion.
Now, you posted this recently about the 7-day price integral Z score, where it's a nice chart, and I'll have my editor stick it in right here. But it looks like, Bitcoin has this gradual, then it kind of has a flat period, then it has another gradual big adoption arrow. And you so eloquently said, but there's no green arrow yet. So why don't you dive into a little bit of this calculation and kind of what you mean by this, and what I guess this could potentially show here going forward. Obviously, it's
Sure.
not a huge prediction. It's just usually using past analysis to try to predict the future. So I'm curious kind of what you think of this and where it's going.
Yeah, for sure. So this, I will admit, this is not something I spend the bulk of my time on, but this is sort of for fun metric exploration and ways to analyze the trend. And you can clearly see some patterns emerge here, right? So you see, and I posted this a few times, you tend to see the shoulder and then a peak, and then it goes into a trough, and then there's a shoulder and then a peak, and then you go into a trough. So right now we're in this sort of yellow, sideways action shoulder phase. And so the question is, like, are we just not going to see green arrow, or do we think we're still going to see a green arrow? I still think we're going to see a green arrow. Without going deep into the math and boring your audience, I will say that the metric here is based on a long moving time window, which gives you a nice smooth curve over time, takes a lot of the noise out. And it's the Z score of the price integral, meaning instead of just looking at the current price, it actually accumulates the price over time, and it looks at the shifts in the trend of the accumulated price. So you just add the next day's price to the previous days, to all the accumulated price before. So, it's obviously going to the millions and millions of dollars, so to speak. And you can basically sh see shifts in that. If you were to plot it as a trend line, you'd see a bunch of changes in that trend. And then what this does is it basically shows you how many standard deviations it's moving away from that trend. So this is why I don't, it's kind of a hard metric to explain, and I don't do a good job of that in the post. But that's what it's tracking. The reason I look at it through this price integral way is I think it's an interesting way to actually, you start to see this pattern emerge that you wouldn't see by just looking at the price in real time, or the price history itself. You actually accumulate that price over time and you see changes in that. And then you can apply like trend analysis to it. So that's kind of what this is doing. So yeah, I think that green arrow is around the corner, and I think we're not going to see that show up here until after it already happens. So.
Yeah, and you have this I mean, we've been talking a lot about price, and we've touched on the retirement as well, but you always tweet out this acronym SHEESH, which I like, stack early and stack hard. You put out another recent about how long it could take to potentially stack 0.1 Bitcoin. And that's, you know, I do a lot of videos on 0.1, or which is 10 million sats, or 1 million sats, 0.01 Bitcoin. So why don't you take us through a little bit of the math there to kind of show just like, sure. You know, even though a lot of people think that maybe we're potentially too late to Bitcoin, that it's still obtainable to get, a good stack here. You just gotta, hit the sheesh, man. Just stack early and stack hard.
Correct. So sheesh. So stack early. That's so funny that you said sheesh, because I've never actually heard anybody else pronounce it.
Maybe. I don't know.
I was thinking.
Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show. I don't know.
I was thinking sesh. But that's
I like the sheesh though. I mean, I don't know.
Okay, well maybe it should be sheesh. Okay, maybe you take ownership over the pronunciation of that. I'm totally fine with that. Basically this chart, it's time to stack 0.1 BTC by DCA. So what this is looking at is that a couple things. One is that if that's your stacking target, 0.1 Bitcoin, I think that's very respectable. Especially depending on where you live, what jurisdiction you live in, and what your expenses are expected to be. That said, the key with Bitcoin is you just need to start. You just need to, the longer you wait to start getting in, you can see these lines start getting further and further apart. And the kind of the x-axis is showing how much you're stacking per week. And then each of those lines is a starting year. And then the y-axis is how many years it's going to take to reach that goal, which is 0.1. BTC. So you can see that if you want to do $400 a month, right? That's $100 a week. You could start right now and it would still take you to hit a tenth of a Bitcoin just over 2 years, right? But if you wait to start until, let's just say 2030, let's just use round numbers, right? So you wait 5 more years and say, okay, I'm going to start my DCA plan and I'll put in $100 a week. Well, now you can see it's going to take you about 12 years to reach that same same stacking target. And you can do the same math for one Bitcoin. It's basic algebra, but the price trajectory is all based on the power law trend. So that's what it all comes back to.
Yeah. So is it too late to get to one Bitcoin? Is that what you're telling us here, Smitty?
It depends on how much cash you have. you know, it's harder and harder all the time to reach one Bitcoin. Indeed, is going to be like a lot of people say, is going to be like, you know, what the goal used to be to try to get to 10 Bitcoin, right? Everybody's, the average person's like, how am I going to get a stack 10 Bitcoin? Now it's going to be difficult for people. There's another chart here. I don't know if you end up pulling it up, but if you take the same approach, to a lot of people, $400 a month, that's a lot of money, right? So right now, if you were to do that in 2025, I mean, good luck trying to get one Bitcoin. It's going to take you like 35 years. And that's shocking to hear it put that way by some people, but that's just the fact. One Bitcoin is a lot. If you want to put in, you know, let's say what's 500, you want to put in $2,000 a month, which some people might be able to pull that off with like a really good job, you know, and they got their finances under control, and you want to put in $500 a week or $2,000 a month, and you start this year, then you're talking, you could pull that off in about 4.5 years. If you start right now in 2025,
to get to one,
but you know, this is DCA. So you can't miss a couple months here and there. It's like, and then again, if you want to wait till let's say 2030, and that same $2,000 a month, again, is going to take you about, looking here, like, you know, close to 30 years. So don't wait around, stack early and stack hard. That's what these charts are meant to communicate.
Yeah, communicate that the growth is exponential here. So, you know, it seems like all of these numbers, even though I feel like they're a little conservative, the conservative numbers are still extremely bullish. So is there anything that you see as a potential, I don't know, black swan or something that worries you about the adoption going forward? Or have you run that thought experiment a million times like the rest of us and just maybe you can't find anything at this point?
Man, that's a great question. So I have thought a lot about the different fail. So in my day jobs, I've spent a lot of time doing failure analysis and reliability work. And so I like to think about a system and its points of failure and its probability of failure and kind of look at things like a probabilistic tree. So I haven't done, to be honest, I haven't done a fully fleshed out mathematical analysis on this, but I will take what I see to be the biggest threats of Bitcoin to see what the likelihood of those things would be. The easiest ones, the lowest hanging fruit, if you think about those, are like the world ending scenarios, right? Where it's like, we're pushed back into the dark ages. There's no electricity, a meteor has hit the earth, and it's okay. Well, like, okay. Like, we have much, much bigger problems to worry about than how Bitcoin's doing at that point, right? The internet gets shut off and forever and never gets turned back on. Okay, we're kind of in a similar boat. I think I'm trying to keep an eye on this quantum computing thing. I'm by no means a quantum computing expert, but what the experts are saying and what the trends are saying is that it's going to threaten the protocol and access to keys in not too long a time frame from now. So it's something that we're going to have to adapt to. At the very least. So I think sort of in the next 5 to 10 year time frame, we're going to have to see some solutions arise from the Bitcoin developer community on that. But there are ways. The good news on that is that I know for sure that there are ways to become quantum resilient. And so I don't think that that's, I think it's a threat to Bitcoin, if we're being honest, but I think it's not something we can't adapt to prevent from being a catastrophic failure.
Now, coming at this from a, you know, a mathematics perspective, I always think is very interesting. I have an engineering background, and a lot of what I have learned about economics has just been, you know, purely self-taught. You know, a lot of what I learned is actually from Preston Pish in the show We Study Billionaires, talking about a lot of analysis. And, you know, one thing that kind of, I guess, dissuaded me from all of this was just looking at the amount of craziness during the 2020 times with the GME craze, seeing COVID and, you know, basically the short squeeze aspect of all of it and, you know, not really being able to explain what the hell was going on. And it seems like Bitcoin is almost in a similar perspective where, you know, a lot of people try to put mathematical equations on it. But I don't know if there's an asset quite like it. So when you're doing your dives with Bitcoin analysis and kind of looking at it in that respect, do you still see it as like the potential of, I guess, like breaking out, or what kind of reasonings do you see that it's still following this mathematical model of like the power law per se?
Yes. Okay. So yeah. So a little bit of background on how I got into things and what are the things that really compelled me to want to do this, I guess, semi-professionally, although I didn't intend that initially. So I, like you, have an engineering background. I have a PhD in material science and engineering, and did some sciencey stuff before that. But I am totally not in economics or finance at all. That's not my background. But what I do have a background in is a lot of data analysis, right? And like you just said, for yourself. And so one of the things that really drew me into this as an to take this seriously as an asset, I had kind of multiple awakening points, or I call them clicking points, when things kind of click. And one of those was when I actually saw the power law for the first time. I saw some people analyzing the power law, and I just looked, the feeling I got from seeing this straight line plotted out, when you look at things in a log-log space, I was like, this is interesting, right? And then, so it's a very simple model, because I knew what power laws were because of the systems that I work with. And so I said, can I, this simple of a model fit the entire history of Bitcoin that well? Of course there's going to be noise, but so I just started doing it on my own. It wasn't that difficult to do. You know, we all know how to pull data from different databases and data sources. So yeah, I started putting a lot of my own analytics together and looked at the traditional regression approaches. And then I, you know, very quickly started to realize that this, there seems to be an underlying power law here. And then the other, by the way, as sort of an aside, every time with Bitcoin, I've had sort of an awakening, strengthening of conviction of Bitcoin, I then put in proportionally more investment into it, personal investment. So that's kind of been an interesting progression on my end. But yeah, so I did that. And then I very quickly noticed that there's like a power law trend here. Why is that? Like, where is that coming from? Why do other assets not behave? Why do stocks not behave like this kind of? And then that got me to really discover, more about network processes, which I had never really thought about too much before. I read that book Scale by Jeffrey West. I don't know if you've read that yet, Brandon, but
no, I have not.
That's a great book recommendation. It's basically a walkthrough of all sorts of different systems in nature and socioeconomics and cities, where underlying growth structure is based on a power law. They call them scaling laws. It's kind of like an alternative name for power law. So, and to me, Bitcoin now, looking back and having done all this research, it is following a scaling law. It's you see all the different orders of magnitude that it's scaled. And so we sort of see it repeat the same old patterns going forward, but it takes longer and longer, but it reaches greater and greater orders of magnitude of scale. So yeah,
it's very interesting. And I'm I like that you've got the engineering background similar to me, because I think when you get into these economics modeling, a lot of stuff just, you know, is taken for, assumptions that need to, it's the way it's been, right? Like the Keynesian economics, all of these different aspects. So everybody's just like, this is how it should be. This is what we need, because this is what we filled out in a textbook. But trying to describe all of this is, I think a reason I see a lot of engineers, even if they're not doing stuff like you're doing, like kind of getting into the Bitcoin space, because, you know, we're always trying to figure ways out and trying to explain things at a deeper route. And I feel like a lot of the economists don't necessarily do that. But I really enjoy your work and enjoy all of the, mathematical breakdowns you've got going on. So why don't you tell people where they can find more of that and, follow along?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Brandon. I appreciate the discussion. I am purely on X right now. So find me at Smidston, what is it? Smidston _ with on X. And sorry if that's hard to pronounce. But then I am bringing up a website by the end of the year. It's not done yet, but my plan is to bring up my own website. It'll be smidstonwith.com. And it'll basically have everything from my charts and analysis to kind of a blog style thoughts and, you know, like kind of the more philosophical things that you and I are talking about, as well as a lot of the retirement types of tools I'll have on there as well, which I'll be updating. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and I'll put all that in the show notes. And yes, Smitty, I'm not going to lie to you. Your name is a little tough to pronounce. It's not as it's not as basic as a Brandon, but hey, I appreciate all your work and you're a great follow. So I'll put all that in the show notes. Highly recommend everybody to check him out. And thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Brandon. Yeah, great being with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.